Welcome back to the Cox Ride Report podcast. I'm your host, as always, Damian Parson. And on the couch with me today is my main man, Mike Sykes. What's going on, Mike?
Yo, yo, yo.
Hey, man. Yeah. So listen, guys, we got a packed show for you. A nice show. We got some NBA coverage coming on, NBA draft coverage. So, hey, let's go ahead and get into it, man. Let's go ahead and throw it in there. The NBA lottery just happened a couple nights ago where pretty much, you know, all the teams who had top picks and had chances for top picks, they ran through the whole lottery process. The Celtics got number one, Lakers got number two, and the Sixers got number three. So, I mean, it kind of went the way everybody expected. But, Mike, what's your reaction to it? What's your thoughts on the draft lottery?
Oh, well, the draft lottery results pretty much went the way I pretty much expected to go. You know, once they started talking about there was a good chance that the Celtics would get the number one pick, that's when I kind of knew they were going to get the number one pick. And the thing about the NBA is, a lot of times I've discovered in recent years, more so since LeBron left for Miami, when you hear something buzzing in the news, you generally need to pay attention to it. There's some legitimacy to it. So when the Celtics got number one pick, I wasn't actually shocked. The thing I think that's perplexing is what they're going to actually do with the number one pick.
Right.
Are they going to keep it? Are they going to trade it? Do they want to bring IT back? It's a whole lot of questions they're going to have for themselves in the next week or so when, you know, when the Eastern Conference is all said and done and the smoke clears and we're going to see a LeBron versus Golden State one more time in the finals. Probably two more times, but that's a whole other conversation. it's a lot of questions that the Celtics will have to answer going forward.
It's very true. My thoughts are simple. It's some bull. That's my thoughts. That's my initial reaction. Mainly just because of some fact that my Pistons are dead in the middle trying to figure out where we're going to go. And we get the 12th pick. And it's like, bruh, like, come on, man. Come on, NBA. Help me out. Help us out. We are a story franchise, too, not just the Lakers and Celtics. Don't forget the Bad Boys. Come on, help us out. We're sitting here. We need a point guard because Reggie Jackson just is not going to work. And it's just, I'm just frustrated with that whole situation. So to sit there and see us at 12 and see the Celtics at 1, the Sixers who continuously tank, and they like to say, trust the process. You need to develop a different process. Like you said, if they don't, you know, make it to the Eastern Conference Finals and within the next 5 years, this was all for naught. So my thoughts on the whole lottery was just, it was bull. But when you talk about the Celtics, they had the number one pick, and that's just segue into the next topic pretty much. What do they do with it? You know, this is a team who is the number one seed, which, like I said on my other NBA podcast, you know, maybe 2 weeks ago, when I asked the question, is this the worst NBA finals ever? The statement I made was that the Celtics may be the worst number one seed I've ever seen in my life. So they are a top three seed in the East. They're not, like me and you talked about before, they're not winning anything until LeBron decides to leave. So you're not beating him right now. You may not beat him for the next 3 or 4 years. So what do you do? What do you do with this pick? You know, do you keep it and draft Fultz or Lonzo Ball when you have IT, who's 29, going on 30? Can you build around him? Nah, because not in my opinion, because he doesn't make the game easier for his teammates. He doesn't set up players. He doesn't give them easy assists. He's a ball dominant guard at 5'9". You know what I'm saying?
I think the way you go about it is, it depends on what happens in free agency first. You got to find out, are you going to be able to get Gordon Hayward? Are you going to be able to try to talk to Paul George? Is that a conversation that you may have? Can Butler be thought out? I think the Celtics, they're going to plan on keeping that pick, but if the right offer was to come around, then they'll probably look to move it. Because like I said, you might be able to get somebody to pay a king's ransom for that number one pick.
Right.
So there's always that team. There's always a dummy. We sat here, and the crazy thing about the Philly thing is Philly's in the position because Philly basically got teams to make bad moves, and that's where they already are. I mean, if it wasn't for the Kings and the Nets, Philly would not be in the situation that they're in now. Because of the Kings and the Nets, due to mismanaging the front office and not realizing that, hey, just because it's 2012, you got a chance to get Paul Pierce, that doesn't, what happens 5 years from now if we don't win the championship?
Exactly.
Well, hey, at least we can rely on the top pick, but you can't do that because you traded away the rights to exchange the pick if you get it. So now you're even deeper in the hole. And this is why the NBA continues to spiral downward, because the teams that need to be in the top of the order, like your Pistons, like the Phoenix Suns, the teams that need those picks, they can't get it. So now you got a star, you got a guy, a possible star, Devin Booker, who might not play with anybody for the next 3 or 4 years.
Exactly.
And might be ultimately forced to go to a team, and hey, and next thing you know, what a guy say, hey, that's a super team. That's all the NBA is, a super team. Because guys get tired of losing after a certain period of time.
Right.
I mean, they try their hardest, but they're in a position where, hey, the front office is incompetent, the coach is incompetent, I don't know what else to do. So, at this point, I feel for these kids, but I don't know exactly what the Celtics want to do with that pick. Like I said, they can trade it, they can keep it. They want to draft Markelle Fultz. I think that would be ideal. Or Josh Jackson if they can't find a three, so they can get him a good two-way player in return. But either way it goes, like we discussed earlier, they're not beating LeBron James. They're not going to come close to beating LeBron James. If they win a game in this series, I'll be actually shocked. And I'm saying at least. Like, I'll be seriously shocked. And I've read people really believe that this series is going to go 6 games. I don't even know how they even fathom a thought that way. Like, I don't even know how they even would think that this series would even possibly go 6 games, especially what LeBron did to him, I think, maybe, a couple weeks left to go in the regular season when he just came in for Austin, just shut everything down. Like, there's no way. There's no way. If your name's not Golden State, maybe San Antonio, you don't have a shot in hell, and you know it.
Yeah, that's facts, though. I mean, for me, when it comes down to the Celtics and what they should do with the number one pick, like we said, they're not beating LeBron right now. You know, it would take them having to get Jimmy Butler to play at the three and somehow get Anthony Davis and still keep IT in order to beat the Cavaliers, period. So for me, I say you pretty much go for your future. And you draft Markelle Fultz. You know, he's 19 years old. Kid's young. 19 years old, 6'4", 200 pounds. He was one of the leading scorers with 23 points, 6 assists, and almost 6 rebounds per game in college. And the way that college teams play defense, it's hard for one guy to be a scorer like that because they play a ton of zone. They play a lot of zone. Almost every team plays zone to force you to shoot outside shots. And in the NBA, you know, it's pretty much, hey, do your thing. You know what I mean? Do your thing. You're going to get a lot of man-on-man defense. And instead of, you know, you're going to see some zone, but, and it's a pick-and-roll heavy offense in the NBA. Everyone's running pick-and-roll. Durant, Kyrie, IT, Steph, LeBron, everyone's running pick-and-roll. That's just a staple of how to create offense now. So you get a big 6'4" guard who can shoot the three ball, who can shoot mid-range, he can attack, he has athleticism, and he has an extremely high ceiling. What you do is you get him, you could either then stash him behind IT and let him grow, but then that leaves you with 4 point guards. So I'm going to say and do the risky thing, the thing that nobody's thinking about here, trade IT off. Just say, screw it. Listen, he's going to be 30 next year. Somebody... And for all the IT fans, I have to address this because I saw a post on social media, on Facebook the other day. I saw somebody comment and said that IT now is better than 2011 Derrick Rose. That's blasphemy. Okay, that's blasphemous. You cannot compare the two Because 2011 pre-ACL Derrick Rose was probably the most athletic guard we've seen before Westbrook came into his prime. Which Westbrook was actually a shooting guard anyway at first. So as a pure point guard, size and everything, he may have been the most athletic we've ever seen. To where he beat you off the dribble. Fast breaks, it was over. He had probably one of the fastest first steps off the dribble. And he was a finisher, dunking on people at, what, 6'2"? He's not even that tall. I don't believe Derrick Rose is. So, yeah, the IT love, I get it. But because he had a decent year last year and he had an MVP-like year this year, I personally don't believe it's a trend. I think it's more of a blip. I don't think he will continue to drop 28 a game. So, yeah, I say trade him off. Get Markelle Fultz, trade him off to try and either stash another pick in the lottery next year or get an established player. Go after, like you said, Gordon Hayward, and the fact that him and Brad Stevens had that connection from college, you go get him to and get rid of Crowder. I say you package IT and Crowder, try to get you a center, you know, or use that pick with IT and Crowder and try to ship it to maybe Chicago or New Orleans or something. Try and get a center, a big man, something. I'm just pulling strings here. I'm just playing fantasy basketball right now, fantasy situation. But do something.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. There was a report that came out early this season, mm-hmm. and they were saying that they could have traded Butler, and I think Crowder was part of that trade. Like, and I said that the Suns didn't want to pull the trigger because they didn't want to trade Crowder. So my thing is, how much do you think the Suns actually value Jay Crowder?
I mean, I hope it's not a lot because this guy is garbage, personally.
That's what I got from it, too. I found that to be hilarious. Like, you're going to hold out on getting a top 20 player because you don't want to trade a guy that can barely average 10 a game?
A guy who takes three-point shots and he's not even that great of a three-point shooter. You know what I'm saying? He doesn't do anything for you off the dribble. He can rebound. He can defend. And he can hit the occasional open three. But at the same time, you're a liability and everything else because you suck. You're not good, bro. You're just not that good. You're not nice. You're not nice. So for me, I look at it as, yeah, there's something wrong if you overvalue, you know, Jameson Crowder, or whatever his name is, you overvalue Crowder. Well, you could have had a Jimmy Butler. You know what I mean? You could have had a premier defender because he is one of the best on-ball wing defenders in the NBA, and he can score the basket, and he gets rebounds. Like, he plays all facets of the game. So it's like he's fearless. The dude don't care. I'll guard LeBron one game and guard IT the next. I don't care who I'm guarding. I'm trying to put clamps on everybody. That's what I love about him and Kawhi Leonard. So when I look at it, it's like, hey, you got to do something to build for your future. Because Al Horford is like, what, 34, 35, somewhere there? You got IT who's going on 30. You got Crowder who's not that young himself. I do like Avery Bradley, though, as a spot-up two-guard who can defend. He has some athleticism and he can create off the dribble a little bit. Got to get him better with it, but he has a little dog in him. So I'm like, all right, you can keep him. Get Fultz. Like I said, you still got Rozier and Smart, so you don't have to start Fultz immediately. But just go ahead and just give up on the IT train. I know Marvin, that's my guy. He's like, man, we got to build around IT. I'm not building around a 5'9 point guard who don't rebound. He doesn't assist well. He doesn't give his teammates easier buckets. He doesn't set them up for easier shots. None of that. And he can't defend. So it's like, only thing you can do is pick and roll, shoot the three, get foul calls, and, you know, run around screens. If that's all you can do, I can't build around you. I'm sorry. I can't. So,
yeah, you know what it almost seems like to me, Damien? It almost seems like half-court offense is almost like non-existent for so many teams in the NBA. Like, I can count on my hands, fingers, and toes how many teams just flat-out suck as a half-court offense. Because that's where the majority of the problems come, and that's what I see with the Celtics. They struggle with half-court offense. They depend on IT
right,
dribbling down the shot clock, trying to get the shot clock to 6 seconds, then trying to force a decision after it's down to 6 seconds. You know, that's not getting you anywhere. That one-on-one realm, that's not going to get you anywhere in the long run.
No.
They play great defense. Offense is suspect, and, you know, they're going to continue to struggle because of it. I mean, I don't know if they'll be able to get a game. I want to say they'll get a game in, but like I said, if they get a game in, I think they're lucky in the same breath. I don't see how they're going to even win a game against LeBron.
Yeah.
It's just tough for them right now. It's tough for them right now. I don't know what to do because they're about to experience something pretty bad. I mean, they're going to go from an emotional high to, you know, we might be trading our quote-unquote best player in a couple weeks. I mean, things aren't going to be the same. That's the one thing I do know going into the season. And the one thing I will give Danny Ainge is if he sees fit that they have to rebuild, he will do that.
Right.
Because he did it to the big three, and he'll do it again if he has to. So if he sees fit, he will rebuild this team. Because, like you said, they have this pick this year. They have another pick next year. So, and on the way that the lottery terms are going, for God's sake, they might get a third top pick the year after that. So the way these things go, you know, the league kind of looks out for their more historical teams.
Of course.
So they'll be okay.
Definitely.
They'll be okay.
They will. Let's go ahead and get to some underrated prospects. You know, there's a lot of guys coming in this draft. And this draft in the top 10 is kind of heavy. This is one of the more deeper top 10 drafts. You know, everybody wants to get in the lottery in the top three, but you still can get quality good players. And, it's, and you know, from the 4 to 10 range, in my opinion, maybe even down to 12 where my Pistons are because I'm hopeful. So, who, you know, Nate, just give me some prospects that's caught your eye that, you know, you don't believe get enough buzz.
Like I said, I believe the kid Bell from Oregon, he seems to be a solid rebounder. His points went up. He's probably a third-year player. And the one thing I do like about these three-year players or some of these guys that get slept on, they come in with no pressure.
Right.
They come in, they're able to contribute to you right away. And these are one of the things that people are constantly talking about with college and kids staying in school long and coming, you ready to play. I think today's system has kind of complicated that. So the longer you stay now, the less pub you get.
Right.
Like people look at you like you're not as good or you might not be as, you know, as talented as the other guy. That's not true. You know, some guys are able to honestly come in and contribute more. Because I also believe when you've been to the tournament a couple of times or you've been deep in the tournament, you almost get an idea of what being in the NBA is like and
exactly
what it's like to have to compete on a higher level as you go up higher. I believe the DJ Wilson kid out of Michigan is a player that I think a lot of teams are sleeping on. But if you look at the size of the kid, I think he's like 6'9", and he can play the stretch 4, and they said he could play multiple positions. And, you know, to get a guy like that in the second round, I mean, that might be a come up for a good team that's trying to build right now. So, I mean, you might be able to get him in the high second round. I like the Dennis Smith. I like the Dennis Smith kid from NC State.
Yeah, I like him too.
I think the Knicks are generally looking in that direction because, let's be honest, the Knicks haven't had a point guard since Mark Jackson.
Right, yeah.
So they haven't had one since Mark Jackson. They've been looking for one. And to me, the Carmelo Anthony era is over. It's the era of Kristaps Porzingis. And it's time to build around him.
Right.
And where his skill set is. Because the thing about the NBA is, if you look at Curry, if you look at LeBron, they've had success because teams understood that, hey, in order for them to be successful, let's put guys around them that can do some of the things that they can do. So when you have a guy that has a special skill set and you put guys around him that can help with his skill set, it's going to make them better. So these teams want to turn around and turn their first around. Build around your best players. Build around what they can do best. And then you just go from there because that's how you obtain success. success in the NBA over a period of time. We're not just talking about where the Celtics, I know the Celtics. The Celtics are a proud organization. They just don't want, you know, a one or two years of lightning in the bottle success. They want long-term success because they've been known for this long-term. So just going to the Eastern Conference Finals, being the number one pick, being the number one seed, that's not good enough.
Right.
That's not good enough. You know, when you're in an organization like that, you have to win a championship or else. And so I think that's the way these other teams are in the lottery they want to build. I think the Lakers are going to go in the direction of Lonzo Ball. I'm pretty sure that, like I said, if he's not there, Boston actually decides to take him, which I would be shocked. But then again, like, I wouldn't be, because you never know until draft day, until the actual name is announced of who's on the card. You never know with these picks. They smoke screen all day. We see it all day in the NFL draft. We talked about that. These guys smoke screen. You know, they'll smoke screen the player to death. And at the end of the day, this team wants them. Another team wants them. And the team after that wants them. So you know how these things go. These things are impossible to tell. The top three can really go any way you see fit. Like I said, I believe Josh Jackson is the safest pick at that three spot. You know, getting the two-way three, because that's typically where the league is going today. You have to have that small forward. If you do not have that small forward, you're in trouble.
Very true. You know, you gave two names. I'm going to give two names, too. One guy, he's projected to go top 10. And for me, I just feel like he doesn't get enough love. And that's Jonathan Isaac, the small forward slash power forward from Florida State. 19 years old. He's 6'11", 205. He has a 7'1¼" wingspan. He's long. He has, now when you look at college, now when I say this, when I give the comparison, I don't want everybody to freak out. He has kind of like a Kevin Durant type of game. Now, did he take over games like Kevin Durant did in his college when he was at Texas? No, not at all. He didn't take over games like that, you know, and balled it like that, but he has a good handle to him. He can shoot inside and out. He's pretty good on the defense. He's slim. He's slender. So, just like how Kevin Durant plays that 3-4 role in certain sets, and if you want to go to a really small role, you put a really small type of lineup, you put him at the 5 to give you that stretch 5 pretty much. We know with KD at the 5 if necessary, but he could do the same thing. Like I said, he has a good handle. He can shoot the 3, shoot mid-range. He can get in the post a little bit. He has a nice touch around the rim. And the thing I like about him, he plays defense. He goes after blocks. He has some aggressiveness to his game. I really want to see him grow into his body, similar to how people wanted to see Durant do it. Durant made it work. Durant, you know, he got he put a little bit of size on him, a little bit of weight, but he's still almost as skinny as he was when he first came in the league, not being able to even get 185 pounds off the bar at the combine. So that's one guy I feel like he can be. His player efficiency rating was 25. When you got guys like Dennis Smith was at 23.4, De'Aaron Fox was at 23, Josh Jackson was at 24.5, and people got him going number 3. So he's an efficient player. So, and I like his game. The second guy is, I'm gonna stick with the forward perspective. He's a junior. So like you was talking about with the guys who stay 2 or 3 years, North Carolina small forward Justin Jackson. He's 22, 6'8", 195. He has a 6'11" wingspan. He averaged 18 points per game with 5 rebounds and 3 assists. He's an efficient player with a 21-point player efficiency rating. The thing with Justin Jackson, he is kind of versatile. You know, he can kind of play point forward at times a little bit. He has a nice little floater to his game. He can shoot really well from the mid-range. He can shoot some outside. He doesn't mind going and getting the rebounds. He's not the most athletic guy, but still, yet he can play. So I could see him, you know, developing, because he's going to, like you said, guys who don't come after their first year, it's like obviously it's a red flag. Like when scouts are like, so you coming out? Oh, no, I'm going to stay another year or two. they go back to the NBA teams, to their coaches and GMs, like, hey, something wrong with that guy, man. He's staying in college when he can come and make some money in the NBA. But that's the problem and for me. And let's jump straight to it. That's really a problem for me. And like you said, that's why the NBA is the way it is now. Me personally, if you make a rule where these kids cannot come out after 1 year, you allow them to develop. First of all, you got to grow into your body, because at 18, 19 years old, you are nowhere near as big as you can, as you're going to be when you're 27. So it's like, let them grow into their body. Look at the NFL. I'm glad the NFL don't allow kids to stay for 1 year. Yeah, we wanted to see Leonard Fournette after his freshman and sophomore year go to the NFL. But if you send a 18 or 20-year-old kid to the NFL to play against 28-year-olds who are grown men, Miles Garrett at 20 years old going up against Joe Thomas in practice, he's going to get manhandled easily. So you gotta let these guys grow. But like I said, Jonathan Isaac and Justin Jackson, two small forward/power forward, are guys I'm keeping my eyes on. I personally, as a Piston fan, wouldn't mind, since we are at number two, wouldn't mind getting Justin Jackson, because we need a young small forward. We do have Stanley Johnson, but he has to get a freaking jump shot, man. Like, he can defend. He gotta get a jump shot, like a 3-pointer soon, because. Yeah, I can't keep dealing with this crap, man. So, you know, like I said, man, yeah, those are my two guys out there I'm keeping my eyes on, who I feel are underrated prospects.
Yeah, so the key, Jonathan Isaac, I heard some things about him. A lot of teams like him. Still got some growing to do, basically, based off of what the announcers that I read and some of what I've seen from him. He's really, really, really raw. So, I think that's one of the reasons why he's going low, because he's raw and he doesn't have a real position yet.
Right.
He's one of those guys that he does have a high ceiling, does have a lot of athleticism, and, you know, when you're 6'9 and you do a lot of things in the NBA, they're going to want you to do some of everything nowadays. I mean, you look at Greek Freak, this guy's 6'10", 6'11", playing point guard. Look at Ben Simmons. This guy's, yeah, I believe Ben Simmons actually grew 2 inches. So they said he's standing at 7 feet tall now. So he's a point guard. Man. So this game is getting, it's crazy now where these guys are, with their athleticism are, and, you know, their size and what they're able to do these days is really crazy. But this guy, he does have a potential. And, you know, maybe that's something that the Pistons should look at. You know, that might be a guy that you guys are looking at, you know, going into the draft. You know, hopefully that'll work out for you guys, because Detroit deserves to be relevant again.
Exactly.
I mean, it's been a long time. They deserve it. Those fans deserve it. Those fans come in, they cheer that team. They're there they'll be there if that team goes 82-0 or 0-82. They love the Pistons, and the city of Detroit deserves it. So they deserve the team that they can be proud of going forward. So I think that will be a great pick for you guys. So, you know, maybe you guys can start competing in the East. Because let's just be honest, it's not very hard to compete in the East. Once you get inside the playoff, I mean, anything is possible at that point, especially from 2 to 8. Anybody can go to the Eastern Conference Finals from that position.
Pretty much. Let's go ahead and jump to... Even though we're in both conference finals, we know what the finals matchup is. Cleveland Cavaliers versus the Golden State Warriors. It's been that way since last year. Since the Cavs were down 3-1, and when Draymond got suspended, we all knew they were going to meet up again no matter what happened in that series. No matter if Golden State pulled off the 4-1 upset, or if Cleveland came storming back like they did and took it to 7 and came back from down 3-1. So, for me, we all knew this was coming, that they were going to match up again. So, let's jump straight to that matchup. In your opinion, what does that series mean for the future of the NBA?
I think that as far as the future of the series goes of the NBA, that is what the NBA has been based off of. Like, a lot of people have a problem with super teams. If you look at the history of the NBA, it's all been pretty much dominated by the same teams, whether it's the Celtics, whether it was the Bulls, the Spurs, the Heat. It's the same maybe 7 or 8 teams that won a championship. So yeah. I think this is the NBA's only real shot because, to be honest, as crazy as this sounds, this is the best they have to offer. If anything else is offered to us, we're laughing at it. I mean, let's just be honest. Like, nobody was going to watch a Spurs versus Wizards finals. That's boring. I don't want to see that. I know other fans don't want to see it.
Right.
So the NBA is really, really banking on this. That's why I believe that they allowed the event for Kevin Durant to go to this team because it's about the money. It's about the eye candy. It's about having the biggest star-driven finals that you've seen in a long time. I mean, it's been a long time since we've seen, we got 2 or 3 actual true superstars that are going to be competing against each other in the finals. You got, 3 or 4 all-star players, 3 or 4 top 20 players. So it should be fun to watch, but, that's the best they're going to have to offer every year until they can get some more competition in the product. It's almost exactly. To the point now you almost think they should cut a few teams from the league just to see if it could be more competitive.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, I agree with you there because for me, when I look at it, like you said, it's so many superstar and all-star caliber players in this finals matchup. You have LeBron, the superstar of all superstars. He's the face of the league. He's this generation's Jordan. That's why when I see people, I had to get to a place when I saw people start putting him above Jordan, I had to say, well, listen, man, they have even the ones who are maybe a little bit older than me. I'm 28. I know that there's guys on the internet that I've debated with that's 31, 32 years old. And I just think they have an 18-year-old mindset. They grew up on watching LeBron because there's absolutely no way you truly believe he's above Jordan, but that's what it is. He's today's Jordan, period. That's just how you have to look at it. So you got him, you got KD, you got Steph, you got Draymond, you got Klay, Kyrie, Love. Man, it's so many good players, so many great players in one series. So at the end of the day, what does this series mean for the future of the league? What it means is players are going to team up. I'm a big Damian Lillard fan. And I'm upset that Damian Lillard is in Portland wasting away. You know what I'm saying? I'm a big Lillard fan, him and McCollum. But the fact that they only have a small forward, somebody that play the 3 position that can get buckets or score and play better and play some defense and help them. They don't have much of a bench. But his talents, he's sitting there wasted. And he said the same thing. He said this year the same thing Kevin Durant said years ago. I want to be competitive. I want to win in Portland. I'm never going to team up with somebody else. Well, KD said it. KD was the first person to say it. And KD decided to renege on his promise. So will Damian Lillard then get tired at age 28 and say, you know what? I'm tired of sitting in Portland. I'm tired of it. I'm going to Boston. Or I'm tired of it. I'm going to this team. I'm going to that team. I'm going to team up with James Harden. He played a 2. I played a 3. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to go team up with Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins or something crazy like that. My question is, what's the next super team? Maybe he decides to opt out and go team up with Greek Freak and create the next young super team with him, Greek Freak, and Jabari Parker, albeit if he comes back healthy after 2 ACL tears. So it's like, what's really going to happen? The fact is, this series just proves there is no competitiveness in the NBA. There's none. The NBA is like the WWE. Instead of building established players, instead of using, for example, the WWE has WrestleMania. Instead of them putting the young, talented guys on the card and using them in the spotlight to build up their brand for the future, they bring back Goldberg and Brock Lesnar and Undertaker, guys who are 40 and 50 years old when they could have had 25-year-olds out there putting on the show for the people. So it's the same thing for me. The NBA doesn't use their resources the way that they should. Build players up, man. Build these players up. We saw a couple years ago how cold-blooded Damian Lillard was. Ask James Harden how he put them out the playoffs a few years ago in that great series they had. You know, when he was out there balling with LaMarcus Aldridge. Look at LaMarcus Aldridge. Speaking of him, he left Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum dry just to go to San Antonio. And now people in San Antonio are starting to hate him because they realize, you're not Tim Duncan, my man. You don't have a heart.
You know, the thing about LaMarcus Aldridge is, speaking on that, I don't believe that LaMarcus Aldridge is a Spur. He's not a Spur.
No, he's not.
And the reason why I say that is, if you look at his game, it's so one-on-one based. If LaMarcus Aldridge was even playing at the level that he was playing at Portland, the Spurs would be way better off. LaMarcus Aldridge, if he doesn't have the ball in his hands, he's almost like a useless player. And it's almost like, even though they lost Kawhi a couple nights ago, that game won, that game was still winnable to me.
Yeah.
And the simple fact that he could not back down Draymond Green, or he allowed Golden State, who is small and little, to bully him out of the post, which is beyond me, was absolutely ridiculous. Dude is trying to do, you got to get to the rack, and you're trying to take a 15-foot fadeaway jumper from the basket. It just didn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense. And so now I questioned a lot of things about LaMarcus Aldridge. I don't know if he's a Spur, and I personally believe if they don't make it to the finals this year, in which they won't, I think Pop is going to look into trading LaMarcus Aldridge or looking to see what they can do for him and what they can do without him in the future. Because I don't believe the Spurs would allow him to hold them hostage from any future progress.
Exactly. And, you know, before we move to the next topic, I just want to say, you know, to piggyback off of that, I'm happy that's happening to LaMarcus Aldridge, because he left Damian Lillard in the dust. That's what he gets for leaving my boy hanging out there, for leaving my boy out there, for him and CJ McCollum to carry that team back to the playoffs. People don't respect Damian Lillard enough for what they are doing in the tough Western Conference with no help on that team. Man, I'm not even going to get into a rant about that. I'm about to just move on to our last and final topic. Let's talk about real quick, how can teams in the East improve this offseason to try and win and dethrone LeBron?
Okay, so we asked the question before. I got an answer for you. The reason why I picked that last, because there's absolutely nothing that they can do. Nothing they could do. It seems they could trade Golden State's entire starting lineup to one of their teams. Because as long as LeBron's kicking, living, they don't put food poison in his food or anything, there's absolutely nothing they can do. The only thing they can do is hope that they can, you know, maybe hold its progress up over the series long enough for a team like the Golden State of San Antonio to come in and finish them off. Because the reality is, they're not built for that. Like, if you look at a lot of teams, you look at Washington. I think Washington will be a great team, maybe, but they don't have a bench. And right. I think their front court is just trash. Like, I don't think Rattat is going to give you anything. Morris isn't going to give you anything. Otto Porter Jr. is over.
Dumpster juice.
And if the Wizards pay Otto Porter a max contract, they are stupid. I'm just going to say it flat out like that. Do not pay Otto Porter a top dollar to stay there, because he's not going to make you better. Let him walk. A lot of teams, it's a lot of things incomplete. When you look at the Hawks, I mean, they added Dwight Howard, but what did Dwight Howard really truly bring them?
Right.
But more headache. I mean, less free throw, missed free throws, and, I mean, what, 6 rebounds more a game? I mean, what is he going to really, really bring you?
Nothing at all.
Like we said earlier, everything is centered around Golden State and Cleveland. And if we have a little bit more time, I actually like to talk about, you know, that finals matchup to see, you know, I want to pick your brain as well. Like, who do you think is going to ultimately come out in the winner of this year's finals?
Okay. Yeah, we can jump into that before we close out. When I look at, like you said, there's nothing really you could do, any of these teams could do, besides just pray that LeBron James just gets bored and retires. But we all know he's not going to do that. You know, LeBron James right now is the NBA's Tom Brady. Let's just keep it. Let's keep it the beat. Let's keep it 100. He is the NBA's Tom Brady. You know, when you look at Tom Brady's chasing, and he was chasing Joe Montana's ring total. He was tied at 4, and he was chasing, trying to pretty much surpass him with that, which he did. Now he's trying to go after Michael Jordan and get 6. You know, and if he gets there, you know, there's not much else you can say about him. So you look at LeBron James, it's the same thing. He has the same responsibilities as Tom Brady, making his teammates' job easier. You know, he has people like Channing Frye out there, a household name now. People know who Channing Frye is. If you're not if you weren't a big basketball enthusiast, you did not know that Channing Frye was even in the NBA. You didn't know he was former son.
You wouldn't even know he was the number one pick at one point.
Exactly. You would not have known anything about Channing Frye. You know, if you're not a big basketball enthusiast, you really don't know about Kyle Korver. You know, you don't really know about these guys. You know, and Darren Williams and stuff like that. If you're a casual fan, you don't know these names until they got with LeBron. Until they got with LeBron. How many Cleveland Cavalier fans, I'm talking about the ones from Ohio, not the ones who follow LeBron wherever he goes, the actual Cavalier fans from Ohio, how many of those guys knew who Kyle Korver was, knew who Darren Williams was, knew who Iman Shumpert was? Like, they didn't know these people. So the same way nobody knew who Chris Hogan was, same way nobody knew who Julian Edelman was, or James White, or Deion Lewis, or Malcolm Mitchell. LeBron, Tom Brady, they do the same thing. They turn people into household names. That's what superstars do. I can't believe I'm sitting here even praising LeBron because I hate this man, but I keep it real. I'm not going to be biased about it. I really do hate him, but I'm going to be honest about it. That's the thing with them, too. They take everybody else's game to a different level in a way. So when you look at it, there's nothing these other teams can do. Nothing, pretty much. Especially when you know some way, somehow, next year, LeBron's going to retool that roster the same way that the Patriots retooled our roster for Tom Brady, adding Cooks and Dwayne Allen and Mike Gillisley and them, guys who will make a difference. So when you look at it, there's nothing these teams can do besides wait for LeBron to retire. But let's jump into the matchup. We can go into that real quick, because for me, and I'm going to say something, and I know my man, you know, shout out to my boy Red Rob over there in Florida. Me and him have had conversations about this. My prediction for this series is that it's all on Steph Curry. I know a lot of people say, well, Durant, the one who left OKC for Golden State. True. I know. I get that. But the most disrespected person on that roster right now isn't Kevin Durant. It's Steph Curry. Steph Curry is averaging 25 points per game, and people say it's a down year. People don't realize this is a point guard who had to adjust his game because the way that they played basketball changed the moment they got Kevin Durant. Another 30-point scorer. Wow, you pretty much push Klay Thompson to being Harrison Barnes 2.0. Curry has to remember going through everything that happened last year in the finals. Kyrie Irving cooking him. I mean, giving him work. Kyrie Irving became unconscious when they started going on that run after Draymond got suspended. Sadly, it took all that, but it took that. And Draymond put himself in that position too. So all you LeBron lovers, I got you. Draymond shouldn't have hit him, but LeBron shouldn't have did what he did either. But it is what it is. Kyrie started cooking. LeBron got hot. JR made shots. So much things happened. But if you look at that series, Curry became a prima donna. Curry got pretty. He wanted to be cute. He's out there on fast breaks trying to throw behind the back passes, getting them intercepted. It was just too much going on and too many things he should not have been doing when he should have just played his game.
It was definitely a meltdown. They definitely let it go. I think this time around, though, it's so it's close, but it's not close at the same time. And the reason why I say that is because if you look at Golden State, talent-wise, they have four All-Stars. And that, to me, is hard to say. Well, how can you lose with four All-Stars? However, I'm going to go into some of the weaknesses that I have seen even with game one. The problem I have, the problem I have with the Warriors is this. They still struggle to rebound the basketball, and they're smaller. And right. So they have problems rebounding when they need to rebound. They can't seem to take care of that. They're still like a little team. And so you see that when you see LaMarcus Aldridge like kind of dominating them on the board, that bothers me because when you know you're going against Tristan Thompson, one of the best rebounders in the game, that he was one of the many reasons why the Cavs were able to come back last year, is because this guy is so relentless on the board. It almost makes me think to a point where Golden State might have to consider starting JaVale McGee in the finals to try to offset that, because Zaza Pachulia is not going to be able to keep up with Tristan Thompson.
No, not at all. That's
not going to happen. It's not going to happen at all. And I think that if you can come out and you can jump on Golden State early, you get them kind of runnled, you get them kind of like disgruntled and have them all over the place like we've seen in game one with the Spurs, you can kind of just, if you jump out on them early, you kind of force them to have to take more bad shots than they want to. Like, you force them to shoot more threes because they're behind now. So now you're going to have to, now they have to play catch up. Right. And then they still have their defensive lapses. And I know Andre Iguodala is still kind of banged up with the knee. And they don't have the same talent they do come off the bench as they did last year. So that's another thing. So their weaknesses are pretty glaring. And I've pretty much seen this all year. And, to a lot of people's point, and to your point, too, sometimes late game in a situation, they act like they don't really know who they want to get the ball in those situations.
Right.
They don't know if they want Curry to get it. They don't know if Durant needs to get it. They don't know if they're going to put Thompson up. So those are things that I think the Cavs can take advantage of. Now, on the flip side of the Cavs, I think some of their problems are this. They're still bad defensively.
Horrible defense.
If you look at these Celtics series, I promise you, if you guys turn on the film, look at this Celtics series, look at the Pacers series, look at the Raptors, look at how many open jumpers these guys miss. The number one team you cannot give an easy shot to is Golden State. If you give them easy shots, they are going to make you pay for it. And another thing I'm noticing about Cleveland, because I didn't really see anybody speak on this, but Kyrie Irving's been kind of struggling in the playoffs.
I saw you post that earlier today.
I don't know if people noticed that, because I know the other night he was 4-for-11. And then I think the other night he had shot under 50%. So I've been kind of noticing this, and I don't know if Kyrie's 100% injured. I mean, I don't know if he's 100% healthy, because I know towards the end of the season he did state that his knee was bothering him. So I don't know if that's something that's going on now. What's going on? But they're going to need Kyrie Irving to be a lot better in the finals, because if he cannot bring those points forward, then I think you're going to be asking a lot for Kevin Love to be your number two scorer. Not saying he can't do it, but I don't know if Kevin Love is ready to live up with that. I don't know if Kevin Love can be your number two scorer.
Right.
I think he's great at what he does. I think he's attempting to play a Chris Bosh role, if you will. He's trying to, do whatever he can. But I think if Kyrie is not able to bring forth the effort, then Kevin Love, what am I saying? He's going to have to step up.
Yeah, he's going to have to.
In the finals, you're going to have to step up. So now the question is, will he be able to step up? I don't know. Like I said, this should be really, really fun. I think it should go a good 6 or 7 games. I have not picked a winner yet. I've been flip-flopping all week about it, because it's like a part of me sees Golden State winning, but part of me can see the Cavs repeating due to the fact that I think the Cavs kind of know what they want to do a little bit more.
Right.
Like, I think they kind of know who they are. Golden State really just kind of put this team together. So when you look at the Cleveland, they know that LeBron's getting the ball. Kyrie's going to get the ball in this position. LeBron is going to get the ball, like you said, make this easier for everybody else. And that's how we're going to roll. With Golden State, it's kind of like, does Kevin get the ball here? Should we give it to Steph? Should we give it to Clay? Should we kind of pick and roll something for Draymond? what should we do? So it's kind of like Golden State still figuring things out. And then the simple fact that Steve Kerr is not around, that still would bother me going in, because God knows Mike Brown is probably one of the worst adjustment coaches in the league. So if you depending on Mike Brown, and a guy that I just find, I think this guy is the most incredibly, the most luckiest coach in NBA history. This dude has got to coach LeBron, Kobe, and now he's coaching the Golden State Warriors. Like, you can't make this up. Like, this dude has gotten to be around all the A1 talent in the league. And, I mean, he's not respected on any level based off of what I've been told. I mean, guys respect his defensive mind state. But head coach, you know how that story goes. Without Steve Kerr, I think they're somewhat in trouble here. So, but I think they're going to finish the Spurs. I think they may even sweep the Spurs. We'll see what happens tomorrow night. I don't even know if Kawhi is playing tomorrow night.
Like, yeah, they said that he's questionable. I had a feeling this was coming, so I was like, because I realized that they, game one and two already happened, so they kind of let, because tonight Cleveland plays at 8:30, I believe, or 8, somewhere in there, game two in Boston. So I'm like, well, I knew they were going to kind of hold off Golden State so that Cleveland can catch up. Of course, you don't want Golden State having more rest than Cleveland. So, I think Kawhi may try to, fight through and play, but in all honesty, that series is over in like five. Yeah. In like five, even if he does pull out one at home, it's over in five.
I think, and you know what? I was listening to Jalen Rose talk earlier today, and Jalen Rose was basically saying along the lines of, if Pop feels like Kawhi's not 110%, he might not play. And you know, Pop's at the forefront of resting players, protecting the interests of his guys. So I think if Kawhi might need surgery or anything where like rear his head up the next couple of days, I will not be shocked if Pop just goes ahead and says, you know what, Kawhi, we're just going to shut you down. Because in reality, the situation is, it's not worth it. You're probably not going to win anyway. You don't want to risk doing more damage to the best player you have on your team, you know what I'm saying, any further. So if I know Pop the way I think I do, if he feels like Kawhi needs to be shut down, they're shutting Kawhi down, and you know that's the end of the story with that. There's going to be no questions or no second guessing on that. Pop won't hesitate to shut that down. And I don't know. If he's not looking good by, tomorrow night, I don't know. I really don't know. I don't even know if they'll win tomorrow night. It's such a hard call. Because looking at them game two, they look so defeated.
Right.
They look so defeated. Like, they just look like they got their heart snatched out of their chest. I thought Jonathan Simmons came to play. I think the Murray kid can really play. And I think Murray is somebody they should look forward to, to building around. I think they got some pieces that they can build around Kawhi Leonard. You know, they got some guys that I think, Anderson and Simmons. I didn't even know Simmons was as old as he was. But Anderson and a couple other guys, as far as draft, pretty well. So I think they got some guys that maybe 3 or 4 years from now, they can really compete. But as long as Pop's the coach, they're going to compete anyway. They'll be back in the mix next year. So, I mean, they get a couple free agents. They get stronger next year. They right back to where they want to be. They're always going to be a game away from winning the Western Conference Finals, possibly representing the Western Conference in the East, in the NBA Finals. They try to knock off LeBron. So they always got a shot as long as they got Pop and Kawhi. They're always in contention. It's just like you guys with Brady and Belichick. You know how it is year in, year out. Everything changes but that. You know what I'm saying? Everything changes. You know who you got to go to. You know who you got to be. You know who you are. So they know who they are. And I'm more than confident, hey, next year, the San Antonio Spurs, they'll be one of the top teams in the NBA again, probably with another 60-plus win record and another opportunity to go to the Western Conference Finals beyond. But that's all I got on them right now.
Yeah, I mean, before I close it out, I'll tell you right now, like I said, man, I just got, like I was telling Marv, I got an eerie feeling, that Curry, I can't give my prediction just yet because I don't know. I'm not really there yet. But before, like I said, before I close it out, I believe Curry, in order for Golden State to win, I think Curry has to be unconscious. And I think he may. But definitely, man, listen, Mike, I appreciate you coming on, my brother, and just talking basketball with us. And, you know, I know a lot of basketball fans are waiting on me to talk basketball and bring their favorite sport to the forefront. So, like I said, man, I appreciate you coming on. Again, everybody. Hey, yeah, man. Again, everybody, thank you guys for listening, as always, and tuning in. I'm Damien. That's Mike. Y'all have a good night.